Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
We want to, as is my custom, do a little review. We've been looking at some of the reasons why Christians in the past might have thought that Adolf Hitler was the Antichrist. And the reason being is, of course, we should never be looking for the Antichrist. We should be looking for the coming of Jesus Christ, the blessed hope. But we should also recognize that the reality of the enemy and the reality of his deceptions, and he certainly deceived Adolf Hitler and did so through occultic means, occultic powers. And so as I listed these reasons in the past, for those who haven't heard the broadcast, I want to quickly give some of the reasons why Christians might think Hitler was the Antichrist, and then further look at some of the books, as well as the Bible, that we've been looking at and examining Adolf Hitler and the comparisons with the Antichrist who's coming. Number one, in the involvement with the occult. You know, Hitler heard voices. He was delivered from destruction on many occasions. He had a sense of providence. It was actually more of a counterfeit providence, a synchronicity or a serendipity, if you will. Well, he had psychic powers. He was anti-Semitic, as will be the coming Antichrist. He wanted to have a kingdom, you know, the Third Reich, just as the Antichrist will have a short-term kingdom, the one-world government. He was probably demon-possessed, as the Antichrist will be possessed by Satan, I believe. Cheated death often. The Antichrist himself will have a false resurrection. Hitler, as I say, cheated death often. We'll look at more of those details down the road. He mesmerized many people by his speech, but it wasn't him. It was the demons within him, I believe. And the Antichrist also will speak great things and sway the masses. He compared himself to Jesus Christ. Hitler did that, that is. And the Antichrist will portray himself as the Messiah in rejecting the true Messiah, Jesus. He had precognitive or false prophetic type understanding of many things, and he used visualization. We'll talk a little bit more about that today. Creative visualization, just like New Agers and those that are involved in the occult use. Okay, so we left off in the book Occult Reich by J.H. Brennan. And really, I want to start off today in Chapter 7 as we look at the esoteric influence on Hitler's life. Okay, page 49, William Scheer's monumental Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. In that book, there are only two fleeting references to Professor Karl Haushofer. We are told that Rudolf Hess, of course, one of Hitler's underlings, introduced Hitler to Haushofer's ideas sometime in the early 20s. He was an initiate magician, a member of the Vril Society and the Thule Group. Both of these were occult groups. And anyway, he seems, like Hitler himself, to have been precognitive. Certainly, he gained a widespread reputation for prediction during World War I, when his gift must have been very useful in his military career. Hess, who was also a member of the Thule Group and a one-time pupil of the strange professor, this man we're speaking of, Haushofer, he was a professor at the University of Munich, he not only referred to Haushofer as a magician, but actually claimed him to be a super chief, our master. A close friend of Haushofer and a fellow member of the Thule Group was the drunken poet Dietrich Eckart, a man often referred to as the spiritual founder of National Socialism. He spent almost 3 years as close advisor to the youthful Hitler. Powells and Bergier, who wrote the book Dawn of Magic, claim he indoctrinated Hitler on two levels. One of them, one of them being that of occult revelation. They also claim that just before his death, he told friends, "Follow Hitler. He will dance, but it is I who called the tune. We have given him the means of communication with them. And that's talking about these entities, these demonic beings. And, of course, this esoteric influence over Hitler. Do not mourn for me, he said. I shall have influenced history more than any other German. Secret chiefs and other exalted beings are not always thought of by occultists as incarnate. Several esoteric schools, including virtually all those which have developed out of the Golden Dawn group, teach that they exist on another non-physical dimension and take on bodies only rarely. An important part of the practical techniques taught in these schools is the method of establishing contact with such entities. And this reminds me a little bit of the contactees. You've heard that term probably. You have the contactees and the abductees and the ET community of UFOs, people claiming to be contacted by these disincarnate alien spirits somewhere. Anyway, was it to these secret techniques that Eckhart referred when he said, we have given him the means of communication with them? It seems a very likely explanation, but judging by results, the entities with which the future Führer learned to communicate were hardly humans at the peak of their spiritual evolution, whatever he may have believed. Certainly Eckhart and his fellow initiates never gave him, as the industrialist Wilhelm Kepler came to believe, a direct line to God. I won't read you the German word because I'll butcher it. Now, we shall presently have to learn more about the Vril Society and the Thule Group, since a knowledge of their doctrines is vital to any real understanding of the occult Reich. Just now, it is interesting to examine the essential nature of the Vril itself. The concept of Vril was created, or possibly discovered, by an English nobleman of the 19th century, Baron Lytton of Nebworth. Bulwer Lytton, as he was more widely known, saw the Vril as an enormous reservoir of universal power, some part of which could be concentrated in the human body. In his novel, The Coming Race, Lytton describes a subterranean nation of supermen who had gained control of the Vril and used it to work miracles. The Vril Society of Germany felt they too had developed techniques for the control of the Vril. Was Hitler taught them by Haushofer? Was the Vril yet another name for the now familiar animal magnetism or bioplasmic energy? Or, you know, we might add ki or many of the other terms for the universal force of Star Wars, etc. May the force be with you. It comes at no surprise to learn that Lytton was not simply an imaginative novelist, but an occultist who studied magnetism. Lodges of the Western esoteric tradition teach their members one or more of three broad occult secrets: the control of a subtle energy like Lytton's Vril or Mesmer's animal magnetism. Once under conscious control, this force can be used as an aid to mystical enlightenment, as a healing agent, or as a means to dominate others, depending on the temperament of the initiate. The control of events and the creation of desirable situations on the physical plane, this is done by training the initiate's powers of concentration until he is able to focus his will like a laser. The preternatural enhanced willpower is then directed by relevant and vivid visualization, usually of the situation which the magician wishes to bring about. Driving force behind the whole operation is, as mentioned earlier, heightened emotion, and that, of course, speaking of Hitler. Once again, the type of events and situations created depend on the temperament of the initiate. The establishment of lines of communication to superhuman and sometimes alien entities held to operate on levels other than the physical, and now generally referred to by occultists as the inner planes. But the neophyte soon discovers that techniques designed to put him in touch, as it were, with the heavens can equally well be used to contact the infernal regions. On the evidence before us, it becomes increasingly likely that Hitler learned all three and concentrated on the negative aspects of each. We have already seen that his control of the subtle energy was of very high order and survived even the breakdown of his health toward the end of his career. Proof of expertise in the second and most truly magical aspect of occult training is obviously more difficult to obtain. But Hitler certainly thought like a magician. His instincts and reactions were those of a man who had undergone the disciplines. His faith in willpower is very well known. Time and again, he expressed the belief that all individuals in all situations would yield to a superior will. It should not require pointing out that this is a magical belief, but many historians have missed it. Alan Bullock hits the nail right on the head when he's talked about forming pictures was precisely what Hitler was doing, this visualization. But it was not, as Bullock suggests, simply a psychological escape mechanism. The Führer was engaged on a typical magical operation, arranging his environment to help him visualize as clearly as possible the situation he wished to bring about. Now, this reminds me a lot of Johanna Michelson's experiences and when she described in her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, where she would visualize entities. One of them was Jesus, she thought, and then another entity who she thought was a humanitarian person, a lady, a nurse, I believe. And she would visualize them, and they would come into her laboratory that she had visualized, you know, for them to come and visit with her. This is what this sounds like to me. The Führer was engaged in a typical magical operation, arranging his environment, you know, his laboratory, whatever you want to call it, to help him visualize as clearly as possible the situation he wished to bring about. Western initiates from the Golden Dawn to the present day have done exactly the same thing in the secrecy of their temples or laboratories. You know, thank God Johanna has come to know the Lord, and the Lord delivered her from all of that. Hitler became enraged when anyone interfered with his consistent visualization with news about unpalatable facts. But even the raging pressure of his turbulent emotions, even the iron grip of his trained will, even the psychotic consistency of his victory visualizations were not enough to change the vast inertia of the opposing reality now ranged against him. Eventually, he came to realize this and changed the picture to something more in keeping with the actual train of events outside his Berlin bunker. But he still had enough energy and skill left to bend reality a little. It ensured, as we shall see, a magical ending to a satanic career. There need be no doubt at all that Hitler mastered Hitler mastered the third occult secret. His lines of communication to the inner planes were well established. Although psychologists are perfectly at liberty to conclude the entities he reached were personifications of forces in his deep unconscious. Now, that's how some people would explain it. I'd say, nope, those entities were demonic beings, very real. The nature of these entities may be judged from the following description of Hitler's reaction to one of them, followed by Hermann Rauschning. He wakes up in the night, screaming and in convulsions. He calls for help and appears to be half paralyzed. He is seized with panic that makes him tremble until the bed shakes. He utters confused and unintelligible sounds, gasping as if on the point of suffocation. Hitler was standing up in his room, swaying and looking all around as if he were lost. "It's he! It's he!" he groaned. "He's come for me!" His lips were white. He was sweating profusely. Suddenly, he uttered a string of meaningless figures, then words and scraps of sentences. It was terrifying. He used strange expressions strung together in bizarre disorder. Then he relapsed again into silence, but his lips still continued to move. He was then given a friction and something to drink. I don't know what a friction is, to be honest. Then suddenly he screamed, "There, there, over in the corner, he is there," all the time stamping his feet and shouting. Hitler was undergoing an experience which, it would appear, had come to others who have made contact with the darker realms of the occult. Dr. Michael McLemore, the distinguished Irish actor, had given me information of considerable relevance here. Some years before the war, his sister developed an interest in esoteric matters and was eventually initiated into a magical order called the Argentium Astrium, or Silver Star. This order was headed by the black magician Aleister Crowley, a former initiate of the Golden Dawn, who subsequently was donned by the press as the wickedest man in the world. He took the title The Beast 666. Of course, he wasn't the Antichrist either, but he took that term. And by the way, many of the the rock stars of my era as I was growing up, like Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple. Some of their members idolized Aleister Crowley. Even the Beatles, and I think the cover, I think it was the album, The Magical Mystery Tour, had a picture of Aleister Crowley on it. So there was a lot of interest in this wicked black magician or Satanist, take your pick. He's described here as a black magician. Having seen some of the world's of the Order's secret practices, Miss McLemore quickly came to realize she might have taken on more than she could handle, but initiates only left this order with Crowley's express permission. She went to see the master, as Crowley insisted on being called. Crowley fixed her with a piercing eye. "So you want to leave?" he asked dramatically. Then, reaching forward to prod her on the shoulder, as emphasis to each syllable, he added ponderously, "Beware of darkness, beware of heat, beware of apes. Now you may go." It was a theatrical gesture, but an effective one in the circumstances. The girl left the order, but plunged into the miseries of a nervous breakdown. This malady, however, is seldom fatal, and in the fullness of time she recovered. Many years later, with the incident forgotten, she found herself in Africa. Late one evening, with the sun on the point of setting, she was walking on the edge of the jungle with a young child, the son of a friend. Suddenly the boy called out, "Look, there's Uncle George." Miss McLemore turned to see Uncle George was not there. The child had obviously been confused by a play of light and shade through the foliage in the short African twilight. She turned back to tell him so, and at that instant a monkey leaped from a tree onto her back and bit her in the shoulder on that same spot Crowley's jabbing finger had touched so many years before. She screamed, and the monkey skeetered off. When she recovered from the shock and examined her shoulder, there was no blood, and the wound seemed mercifully small, but she contracted meningitis from the bite, and within days had taken to her bed, stricken by increasing bouts of delirium. During one of them, she suddenly sat up, face white, and pointed to a corner. "He's there! He's there! He's in the corner! He's come for me! Crowley's come for me!" So, very interesting, you know, similarity to Hitler's experience with black magic that he was involved with, no doubt. She did not use strange expressions strung together in bizarre disorder, for these, in Hitler's case, were probably the words of power used by a trained diabolist to bring his unwanted visitors under control. Perhaps it would have been better had she known them. Hitler eventually fell into a deep sleep and recovered from his experience. Miss McLemore sank into a coma and died. And you know, this is definitely a reason not to be involved in the occult in any form. And I just want to say that, you know, my wife was involved to some degree in the occult and was delivered, and there were many who tried to get me involved, and in fact it's that fact that drove me to Jesus Christ. And my wife and I both were delivered many years ago. So once again, I have to emphasize that Jesus wins. He's already won, and we win because of Jesus. But we need to be reminded of this when we deal with these dark topics, and be reminded that Christ is the overcomer in all of these things. Now, speaking a little bit more about magic and visualization and such, I want to turn to one of my heroes, Dave Hunt, and his classic book, The Seduction of Christianity. And in this book, page 142, under the chapter of Mental Alchemy, he writes, in his book, Magic, an Occult Primer, leading occultist David Conway explains the absolute necessity of visualization for performing ritual magic. The technique of visualization is something, and this is, of course, David Conway, this man who's into the occult, the technique of visualization is something you will gradually master, and indeed must master if you're to make any progress at all in magic. It is our only means of affecting the etheric atmosphere. It enables us to build our own thought forms, contact those already in existence, and channel the elementary energy we need down onto the physical plane. I actually have that book in my library, Ritual Magic, an Occult Primer. And the foreword is by Colin Wilson, who's written many books on the occult. And from page 59, that same quote that I just read from Dave Hunt, the Christian discernment expert, from his book, quoting was quoted from page 59 of this book by Mr. Conway, and under the topic of the world and the magician. So I don't need to re-quote that quote, but I will make these further comments that Dave has made in his book on page 140. Visualization, the ancient tradition. According to Hermetic tradition, the Egyptian god Thoth, known to the Greeks as Hermes Trismegistus, I may have not pronounced that well, the thrice powerful is what it means, was the originator of alchemy. He taught that the physical world could be transformed through mental imagery. Equally as ancient, the use of visualization in yoga to create reality with the mind and achieve union with the All, or Brahman, dates back thousands of years. In a recent interview reported in the Journal of Transpersonal Psychology, the Dalai Lama declared that the Buddhist leader declared that the use of the imagination to generate or visualize an image in the mind's eye is an integral part of tantric yoga. And he explained how this ancient practice is related to similar techniques recently adopted in modern psychotherapy. Christian leaders who promote and defend visualization seem unwilling to admit that it lies at the heart of religious beliefs that are demonically inspired and unalterably hostile to Christianity. They suggest instead that shamanistic visualization is a counterfeit of God's truth that they teach. In other words, that they teach the true visualization, and it's okay. However, there is no true visualization taught or practiced in the Bible for Satan to counterfeit. Visualization is as absent from Scripture as it has always been present in the occult. Neither Isaiah, Jeremiah, nor any other biblical prophet created his visions through visualization, but received them by inspiration from God. Jesus didn't teach that his disciples could get him to appear at will by visualizing him, or that we should visualize what we are praying for. And I'm going to mention a little bit more about that in just a second from my own comments. Yet this is being taught by Christian leaders today, who, without intending to lead anyone into occultism, are nevertheless pointing them in that direction by some of the methodologies they promote. So it's a very dangerous practice, because whether or not someone believes or thinks that they're entering into the realm of the occult doesn't mean it's not true. Just ask Johanna Michelson. You know, she thought she was doing God's will. The Beautiful Side of Evil was the name of her book. Everything she was doing was good and beautiful. And then she saw the roots of it behind it and the purposes that Satan was doing these counterfeit miracles. Now, what I wanted to say about Jesus, you know, where it says that that we should visualize what we were praying for, I heard Joel Osteen on television several years ago, and he described how he and his wife, early in their ministry, I assume early, would go down for 3 years. They traveled down to where the Houston Rocket basketball team had their stadium in Houston, and they would sit there, and they went down there often over a three-year period, and they would visualize themselves receiving the keys to the doors of that stadium from the mayor of Houston. As I recall, that was what he had stated. And that they did this for 3 years. And over that period of time, along with prayer, they say, of course, they ultimately, and this is a fact, got that stadium, and that became the site of their mega church. Okay? Now, if you know anything about Joel Osteen, of course, and we don't have time to go into his doctrines, but let's just say that, you know, for one, prosperity doctrine, you know, visualization, word faith, you know, confessing things into reality, and of course, visualizing things into reality, all of these will bring you into deep deception. And as we saw from Dave Hunt's excellent research, are a part of magic, a part of New Age magic, whatever you want to term it, it's part of the occult. And so I just wanted to share these things with you, because the reality is that this was a big part of Adolf Hitler's practice. I mean, he was involved with a lot of different things, but he used visualization. Okay, now let me move, with the limited time that I have, back to the occult Reich. Hitler was, as we have seen, a strange man, but not half so strange as the society he created. For the Third Reich, which had its roots in the back room of that seedy tavern, was in the deepest sense an occult state. Its doctrines were not those of National Socialism, if individually those two words have intrinsic meaning anymore, but of a unique magical socialism. Its inspiration was drawn from a dark substratum far better left untouched. My father broke the seal, wrote Albrecht Haushofer, son of the initiate Karl. He did not feel the evil one's breath, but set him free to roam the world. Initiates have always warned that the wrong use of the occult energies will ultimately bring about the destruction of the operator. It is a warning much misunderstood. In essence, all it means is that a certain magical approach carries the seeds of its own downfall. The great temptation of the black magician is to overreach himself, where the individual already sozzled with the glittering intoxication of magical ideas and warped by the psycho-spiritual exercises of magical training, discovers in himself some measure of genuine occult or psychic power, he is usually only a short step from the abyss of megalomania. Hitler, as we have seen, had precognitive ability. It never deserted him. By 1944, the tide of war had turned firmly against Germany. But the dark initiate, who ultimately held the fate of the fatherland in his hand, still had faith in the methods of magic. Writing about this period of Hitler's career, Alan Bullock comments, Hitler's faith was crystallized in the belief that if only he could survive the buffetings of the waves which were breaking over him, he would be saved by some miraculous intervention and still triumph over his enemies. Everything depended on the will to hold out. Everything did indeed depend on the will. But Hitler was not waiting for a miraculous intervention. He was waiting for his occult exercise of will to produce results, as his occult exercise of precognition had produced results a few months earlier. Bullock came far closer to the truth when he wrote, until he could force events to conform to the pattern he sought to impose and reappear as the magician vindicated, he hid himself apart in his headquarters. Let me just say, folks, the good news is that even the real Antichrist is going to lose also after his short seven-year reign. And 2 Thessalonians 2:8, Revelation 1:16, Revelation 19:15 are good verses to meditate on after hearing all of this dark stuff. But, you know, just be thankful that you belong to Christ. My wife and I were delivered. You can be delivered if you're involved, but do not be fearful, for Christ is Lord.